This episode is marked for sensitive content. Please check content warnings in the episode description before listening. This week on the Breakup Breakdown.
I was like, if he finds me, I'm so scared of what's going to happen. So I called my brother and I was like, hey, can you come over? I kind of need you real quick. And my brother's like, no, I'm not in town. What do you need? And I was like, oh, being really crazy, he's drunk, and when he realizes I'm on the phone, he charges at me and knocks my phone into the floor. I run to the bathroom downstairs, and I was like, he's going to kill me, guys. If I did not believe in God before, that day proved everything for me.
When you feel like you've found the one for you, you never expect for them to become a felon instead of your fiance. Welcome to season 6, episode 19 of the Breakup Breakdown. I'm your host and lead relationship PI, Abby Murphy. And this week, we've got a submission where the story takes a horrifying turn. It's a tale of how our interviewee says she thought she was in the healthiest relationship she's ever had, and it turned into a nightmare. And if you're wondering where all of these crazy breakup stories come from, I always take submissions from a form in the episode description. Sometimes people submit people they have seen on TikTok, people they know in their real life, or sometimes they even submit their own breakup stories. Wherever the story comes from, we love hearing what happened and getting good lessons along the way. So if you've got a tip off for the podcast, head down to the description and click on the submission form. And as always, if you want to jump to a certain part of the interview, you can find timestamps in the episode description. Hey, Heartbreakers. Welcome back to another episode of the Breakup Breakdown. Appreciate you tuning in. So this week we've got a submission from someone who says they thought they were in the healthiest relationship they have ever been in, and it turned out to be anything but. But before we get into that, every week we give a shout out to a different domestic violence shelter throughout the country just to raise more awareness. And this week we are giving a shout out to Brass Incorporated in Bowling Green, Kentucky. They're a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to helping victims of domestic violence and their children escape their situations and live better lives. So for more details, head to the episode description. Okay, so into this week's submission. This submission caught my eye because the headline that I was given was, she was almost a Dateline episode. And I'm personally not someone who's a huge fan of true crime. I think sometimes it can feel a little bit gratuitous to listen to the worst day of people's life. But I got diving into some of the details that I was given. Some of the details that I had gotten were that this woman had just gotten out of a divorce for somebody that she was married to for 10 years. And then instantly fell for this guy that she would start to do everything with. They apparently moved in together really quickly, were doing vacations together, so much so that they even started working at the same job. And on paper, I guess it's kind of that seems like it's moving really, really quickly. But if you're somebody in that person's life, maybe you know the details, and it's kind of this is just the right relationship and everything's moving towards intertwining their relationship together. But something happened to where this guy would end up getting arrested, and it all had to do with an altercation he had between him and his now ex-girlfriend. And so I could kind of tell, okay, this seems like it's the kind of story that it's important to spread awareness as to what's going on. Let's hear what happened in this relationship when we break down this week's breakup.
I had just got out of a 10-year marriage, and my ex-husband ignored me a lot, and I spent a lot of time alone, and he was the exact opposite. Always wanted to hang out with me, always wanted to do things, talk to me. So it was wow, this is the exact opposite of what I'm used to. And it's kind of nice having someone who actually wants to hang out with you instead of feeling like you're just getting on someone's nerves. So it was just really nice. The typical love bombing thing. It was really nice to have someone who called me when they woke up before work in the morning, or text me good night at night, and things like that. I was in a very vulnerable state too. I was very lost because after 10 years, my whole life had just turned upside down. And now looking back on it, I'm he realized that I was vulnerable. I wasn't in the best state of mind. So sometimes I feel like I was an easier target than what I would be right now.
How long after the divorce did you start dating? When did you feel ready to get back out there?
I guess I've been divorced about 8 months whenever I met him. At about the 6-month mark, me and my therapist started talking about it. I didn't really know how to talk to men anymore. I was super awkward. I've always been real nerdy anyways. But after 10 years, I did not know how to have a conversation with dudes anymore. They would be flirting with me and I would start blushing and start giggling like a 16-year-old girl and run and walk away. So my therapist was Why don't you just try a dating app? She's like, just download it, text someone. She's like, if anything, then whenever a man approaches you in public, maybe you won't be so weird about it. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. I don't really feel like downloading a whole app and making a whole profile. So I already have a Facebook. I'll just use Facebook dating. It's a lazy way of doing it. That's why people do it, because you don't have to download a whole app. Like, it's literally right there on your phone already.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. I was like, why Facebook dating? But honestly, I like the concept of Facebook dating. Like, I almost wish, maybe not Facebook dating, because my generation doesn't really get on Facebook, but like Instagram dating, I would kind of be down for because a lot of people already use Instagram as a dating app anyway. Like, if they're
Yeah.
both just sliding into somebody's DMs, but it's hard to know like who's single. Like, some people just don't post their girlfriend. And so you could think
Yeah.
he's single, but he's not actually single. Was everything really smooth sailing, or did you notice some red flags during this relationship?
No, in the very beginning, it was awesome. We actually met because I got COVID and I was stuck at home. And that's when I was like, I'm sick and stuck at home anyways. Let's do this Facebook dating thing. And like, we literally met the day I created my Facebook profile. It was awesome. Like, he was like, yeah, if you want, I'll like bring soup by. Like, do you want me to like bring stuff to you? I was like, no, dude, I have COVID and you're a stranger. You're not coming to my house first. But so we waited like 2 weeks. And that first 2 weeks before we met, like, he would call me every day and FaceTime me every day and like check on me and be like, oh, how's your fever today? How are your symptoms today? Like, put in the effort to seem like he cared. And that was nice. It was fantastic. The day that we actually met up after 2 weeks and hung out, it was like honestly intoxicating. Like, I don't want to use the word magical, that sounds cheesy, but it was very intoxicating. Like, kind of what you would want the first time you're meeting someone. Like you meet them and like you immediately hug them and like spend time with them and it feels like you've known them forever. And so after 2 weeks of texting him all the time, even though I never met this man, it felt like I've known him forever. And it it makes it easier if you become emotionally attached.
Yeah, it's like you start getting to know their digital persona. And in my experience, people are so different over text versus in person. Like, I've always noticed like guys that are really bad at texting are amazing in person. And guys who can like turn it on over text, it's usually because they've had to use it as a coping mechanism because they're not super outgoing or extroverted. And that's totally fine. But then you're like, you have this cognitive dissonance of like, I know this person and I know this person and they seem totally different.
Yes. So I did learn that because, yeah, as soon as we met, it was like we didn't have this like dating, getting to know each other thing. It went from us being strangers to talking every day to being in a committed relationship. And even that day, whenever he asked me, he's like, so do you want to make this official? The first day we met, he's like, do you want to make this official? And I remember thinking in the back of my head, I don't know how I feel about this. Everything was going so great and I didn't want to mess it up. So I was just like, yeah, okay, like that's fine. We ended up going back to his house because we met out in public, of course, and it was fine. Like I was safe. Like nothing dangerous happened that day. Like we just went and ordered pizza and hung out and like watched movies and stuff. So like it felt very natural. Like we even talked about that it didn't feel weird us hanging out because usually, listen, I'm awkward. So I was like, it's weird that this doesn't feel awkward. I was like, maybe this just feels good. I don't really know what I'm supposed to be feeling right now. It was good for like 2 months or so, I guess. And then slowly things started taking a different turn. Whenever I would have other priorities or like didn't want to do what he wanted to do, it was a huge thing. I have addiction in my family, and so I go to Al-Anon. It's for people who love addicts. I didn't know at the time that he was an active addiction. He told me that he was in recovery and he had been sober for like 2 years. So whenever I would have like important Al-Anon meetings, or if my sponsor wanted to talk to me, or like even just me going to Al-Anon meetings, I would have to like lie. Or it would be like a huge fight of, well, why are you going that tonight? Like, we're supposed to have date night tonight. You never mentioned anything about date night tonight until you found out that I was going to do this.
Why do you think he had a problem with you going to those meetings?
Because it helped me realize that he wasn't sober. He
Ah.
was getting drunk without me knowing, or like I would just call him on his BS basically. There's this thing called a dry drunk where you can be sober, but you still have all the behaviors of someone who's drinking. You're still just as aggressive. You have the mindset. Basically, you're not doing the interpersonal work. You're physically not drinking, but you're still doing all the same things you were doing in your active addiction. It's like, yeah, you're physically not drinking, but you are still the same asshole that you were whenever you were drinking. So like, I was like, do you need like to talk to someone? Like, do you need some help? Like, what is going on? Like, are you struggling with your sobriety? And like, he just really did not like, I guess, being able to question his sobriety, because I had all the help from people who knew the signs of someone who was drinking and using.
Did you feel like your relationship changed once you started realizing he had addictive problems?
Yes. The night I figured out that he was drinking again is that there was this really big meeting, like there was like special speakers coming and my sponsor wanted me to meet this woman, and like it was like kind of a big deal in the Al-Anon community, to be honest. I was gonna go, and he like literally hid my car keys. I couldn't find my keys. But that night in particular, he like ended up sitting there. He's like, well, if you go, I'm going to start drinking. And like, he just had booze in the house. I was like, why is this even in here? If you're not drinking, why is it just here? And he's like, well, this has been here the whole time. I was like, you're telling me as an addict in recovery, you've just had liquor in your house for 2 years and you haven't touched it? Like, I don't really think so.
Talk to me about how that would continue to affect your relationship, because I mean, addiction is no joke, obviously. And you're in a program where you're trying to, is it a support group? So like, you know how to support people in who have personalities, or?
Honestly, it's exactly like AA is for addicts, because like when you have addicts in your life and you love addicts very much, like my best friend is an addict, my mom is an addict, I've grown up around addicts my entire life. It's like you get sucked into the whirlwind. If they have an issue, it's like it becomes so dramatic and they come to you, you get sucked into their world and those issues become your issues. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn to say no to these people and do it with love and not feel guilty about it. Because it's like, they're like, oh, I need this money. And you'll be like, I'm not giving you any money. Well, if you don't give me money, then I'm just going to go have to sleep with someone to get the money. Or if you don't give me the money, then I'm going to go rob someone and I may go to jail. And then like you feel guilty. You're like, it's easier for me just to give them this $20 and know that they're not out doing things that they shouldn't be doing. So it's like Al-Anon kind of teaches you to stick to your guns and say, no, I'm not doing that. You're not going to guilt me into doing what you want. So it kind of helps you from stop being able to be manipulated as easily and to stop staying up all night, because like you will be up all night worrying about them. Are they safe? Are they in a ditch somewhere? Are they doing things that they're not supposed to be doing? And so it really teaches you to, that's their choice. Yes, you're worried for them and yes, you love them, but you can't change that. So it helps your way of thinking a lot too.
Do you feel like your experience in the group and also having relationships with other addicts, do you feel like that set you up for better success with this relationship? Or do you feel like you were almost at a disadvantage because now it's different? Like it's a romantic relationship. And I feel like even people who aren't dealing with addicts, we are so prone to breaking down our boundaries for those people.
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. Sometimes I think that that made me more vulnerable because I'm very empathetic and because I have so many addicts in my life and I've loved so many addicts. It's like, it's fine. It's just another addict. It's fine. Like my mom jokes around and says that I collect addicts like Pokemon cards. I was like, that's that's not really my goal here, but I think it did. I think it made me just a little bit easier to take advantage of because I love so many addicts already.
Yeah. Okay. So talk to me about the continuation of this relationship, because I'm, you know, this is the breakup breakdown. So things, you know, don't end well here. How do we get to the end of this relationship? Like what else has to happen for you to decide to leave?
2 weeks before we went to Florida, I had gotten so depressed and so sick that I quit my job. fighting with him all the time. I had no energy, and I work from 4 until like midnight. I'm on the line. It's hot. I can't be up arguing with you until 6 o'clock in the morning. Like, I can't do that and do my job both at the same time. So I finally told him, I was like, I am so depressed. I'm struggling. I was like, I'm failing at work. I'm failing at home. I need something to give. So he's like, that's fine. If you want to quit your job, that's okay. We can make it work for a little bit. And then every day until I found a job, I was lazy. How dare I quit my job and make him pay all the bills? Like, and that was a big thing in Florida. He was like, yeah, you know, as soon as we get back home, you have to find a job. I can't keep paying all of our bills. I just paid for this trip to Florida. I was like, we had this conversation before I quit my job and you said it was okay. I tried to communicate with you how I was feeling and you said it was fine. And now I'm a lazy bee because I haven't worked in 2 weeks. I'm like, it's 2 weeks. I've had a job since I was 16 years old. Like, this is the first time in my entire life I haven't had a job. And we talked about it first. So we finally get back, and every job offer that I have offered, there is a problem with it. I got offered another restaurant job. Well, I don't want you to work those late hours because I never get to see you. I'm a very communicative person. Like, I'm going to communicate with you the offers that I'm getting. And like, if we were fighting because you were mad that I was waking you up when I came home at midnight every night, I was like, well, if the problem is me working till midnight, fine, I won't take that job. And then I got offered another job. Well, that job's not in the safest neighborhood. I don't want you to work there. And so like, he would have a problem. And we would fight about me taking these jobs until finally, just surprisingly, a job at his factory opened up. And she would be perfect for this job. And all it boiled down to is I'm a very friendly person. I'm outgoing, and like, working at these restaurants, me and the cooks, we'd go out drinking and stuff after work. And he didn't like that I would do that. So really, you just wanted me to come work at the factory with you where you could watch me all the time. And I was miserable. I didn't fit in there. Half the people that worked there did not like me. One, because he was telling them crazy things about me before I started working there. I didn't know that. And two, it just very different people, very different culture. At the end of it, I'm sitting there looking at where I live, where I work. And I'm like, this is not my life. I don't know how I got here. As I was going to say, I was in a very vulnerable spot. I was in the process of getting my life back together. And then he comes in and seems to have all the answers to my problems. And it's just this great savior that you and your dogs can come live with me and blah, blah, blah.
So you go through all of this, and you know, it's an up and down, and your story sounds like a lot of the experience I've heard from people, where people wonder like, okay, well, I'm hearing all of this and it's like, why didn't you leave? But when you have good days and you have bad days, sometimes it's hard to prioritize the bad days over the good days and decide to get out of that relationship. But for you, like, what was that last straw for you? Like, you're dealing with someone who has an addictive personality and you're crossing boundaries maybe you wouldn't cross, but what is that final moment for you that you're like, this is it for me, I'm done
there? I had found out that he had slept with my supervisor at work, and I was like, why didn't you tell me this before I started working here? I was like, it happened before me, it's not a big deal, it's just kind of embarrassing that you didn't tell me it happened. I feel like you did not give me all the information so that I can make an educated decision. Maybe I didn't want to work next to the girl that you had a one night stand with, but you didn't care to give me that information. So like, we were fighting about that. He tried to be like, she seduced me, it's all her fault, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, that's not the question. The question is, why did you not tell me? So we go home that day, because I find this out in the middle of my shift at work, and on our lunch break, I'm like, what is like going on? Like, what? We get off work and we go home, and he's very upset because I won't believe him. Like, he keeps trying to put all the blame on her.
How does that subject even come up? Like, you guys are literally at work, and are they just kind of like, oh yeah, remember when we hooked up that one time?
She was talking to me. She's a lovely woman. She did not tell me. I think she thought I knew, because she was like, yeah, I can't believe I had sex with what's his face. I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, he didn't tell you me and him hooked up one time. And I was like, no, like, he did not tell me that you and him were. The look on her face when I told her that I did not know, she legitimately felt bad. Like, I think she, like I said, I think that she thought I knew, because they had worked together for like 5 or 6 years. He'd worked there a long time. And like, I mean, he was single. It's not the fact that he hooked up with her. It's the fact that he didn't tell me. And so after I find out and like we go on our lunch break and I confront him or whatever. And then we get home and he's all upset because the entire car ride home, he's tried to convince me that she seduced him. And of course, like I said, I'm like, I'm not here to question who seduced who. I'm just upset that you didn't tell me and I couldn't make my own decisions. And then so his answer is he decides to go to the liquor store and he gets drunk that night and he's going around the house and like yelling and like punching holes in the wall. And me and my dog's weird because it's a townhouse. We go upstairs and I'm like, I'm not dealing with that tonight. I'm just going to stay up here by myself. And of course, the next day he's hungover, so he doesn't go to work. So I go to work and I was supposed to go hang out with my friend, but on the way home, she called me and she canceled and she's like, hey, my son is sick. I'm so sorry. We can't like grab drinks and stuff tonight. So I go home and he has sat there and got stupid drunk all day long. He is blaring music, got the TV all the way up. My poor dogs. I have a German Shepherd. It's so loud in the house. He's like hiding upstairs, like his head under the pillows because it's so loud. I come home and he's mad that I'm there. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, my plans got canceled, blah, blah, blah. He's like yelling and screaming. And so I called my brother and I was like, hey, I was like, can you like come over? I kind of like need you real quick. And my brother's like, no, I'm not in town. I can't make it over right now. He's like, what do you need? And I was like, oh, being like really crazy, he's drunk. And when he realizes I'm on the phone, he charges at me and knocks my phone into the floor and it goes flying across the room. And it actually like he breaks it. It like pops open. You can see the cords popping open. My screen is completely broken down the middle. If I did not believe in God before or some type of higher power, that day proved everything for me. Because even though my phone was broken, my call with my brother never dropped. Yeah. And so my phone is broken. I can't hang up and call the cops. I literally, all I can do is stay on the phone with my brother. And so once he realizes I'm still on the phone, I run to the bathroom downstairs and he's like trying to rip the door off and yelling at me and like screaming. And my brother's like, stay on the phone. Do not hang up. I'll be right back. And so he three ways the cops in. At some point, while this is going on the line, my ex, I guess he tires himself out and he goes outside. And while he's outside, I get the dogs and me and the dogs run upstairs to the bedroom. And of course, I'm like stopping and closing every door because I don't want him to know which room I'm in. And I'm like locking all the doors so that like he's distracted for a few minutes. And finally, I make it to our bedroom and there's this big giant closet in there. The dogs, unfortunately, I can't fit the dogs in the closet with me. So, and I'm having to make like split second decisions. So I leave the dogs in the bedroom and I climb in the back of the closet. You can hear him like going through the house looking for us and like yelling and banging on doors. In the meantime, while he's doing that, I'm on the phone with the cops and the dispatcher. She's like asking me all these questions. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But you have to realize we have to be very quiet. I was like, if he finds me, I'm so scared of what's going to happen. I was like, he is going to kill me, guys. She's like, well, just hang on. It was only 12 minutes from the time my brother called them to them coming and kicking in the door. But that was the longest 12 minutes of my life. I'm sitting there listening to him yell and call me all kinds of bees and all kinds of whores and all the things and how useless I am and blah, blah, blah. And the dispatcher's talking to me. I'm like, shh. He's in the room with me, like, because I can hear him bust the door open and he's yelling at the dogs and cussing at the dogs. And so when I realize he's in the room that the closet's in, I'm like, everybody shut up. He cannot find me. I was like, y'all need to shut up. And so you can hear him because luckily there was like two or three closets in this bedroom. He's like trying to, I guess he tires himself out because he doesn't come to my closet door. He goes back downstairs. Luckily, by that point, the cops are downstairs and he realizes I've called the cops on him. Well, I said it's a townhouse, so the door's here and the stairs are here. He's like 6'3". So he decides the answer is to sit between the stairs and the front door. And so he's trying to hold the front door open with his feet, with his back against the stairs. The thing is, he didn't realize that one of the cops, their foot was in the door. whenever they had tried to open the door. So he's sitting there smashing the cop's foot in the door. While he's doing that, the other officers are going around the back of the townhome and have bust the back door open and arrest him at gunpoint because, one, he's holding me hostage, and two, he's resisting arrest. And so since I'm upstairs on the phone calling the cops, then they have a legal right to open the door without him opening it. And of course, he's arrested and he got charged with hurting the police officer for resisting arrest. And they did give him a felony because he pushed me. Whenever he charged at me and broke my phone, he actually pushed me into a bookshelf. And even to this day, I need a hip replacement where he pushed me into the shelf so hard. I'm 35 and I need a double hip replacement. I found out now I have rheumatoid arthritis, which affects all your joints. They said that the trauma of being in that relationship activated those genes that I had. My life will never be the same. I lived through it, but my body and my life will never be the same.
How are you coping with that?
There was a couple of months where I was very angry. Not even at him. I was angry at myself for a long time. I had to learn to forgive myself. I had to forgive myself before I could ever forgive him, to be honest.
What did it take for you to get to a point where you could forgive yourself?
My therapist, honestly, she is amazing. She has been my therapist for 3 years now. We went through the relationship together, and even she admitted, she's like, I did not realize. She's like, I knew you guys would argue, but I didn't realize how bad it was for you. I was like, me either. Like, because I didn't tell her. I just didn't tell her all the craziness going on because I was ashamed. And it's like once I became honest with her about what was happening, I was able to become honest with myself and we were able to move through that. Because how can your therapist help you if you're not telling your therapist the truth?
What was the hardest thing for you to admit that you had kept from her and yourself?
That I really thought that was the healthiest relationship I ever had. My ex-husband was a serial cheater. Because he didn't cheat on me, I was like, oh, look, he actually cares. And no, there's a reason why he didn't cheat, because he put all of his angry efforts into one person. You don't, whenever you're that angry, you don't have time for multiple people. And he would take advantage and manipulate his kids. He didn't need other women. Like, his poor son thinks that he hangs the sun and the moon and the stars. And that's actually why I had a lot of guilt about having him arrested. I was like, his son is going to hate me and I love him so much. And because I lived there and like he had his kid half the week and like I had grown to love that kid. Like we had our moments and I was like, he's going to hate me so much. And I've worked so hard to get him to like me. And because he was not a fan at first. They're hard to win over sometimes. The only thing they care about is food and their friends.
Do you think you would have ever left that relationship if it hadn't been for something that put your life in danger?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I just felt like something wasn't right 2 months before the major incident, like maybe like a month, I guess. I realized that I wasn't happy. And that something had to change. I wasn't sure if it was my job, if it was him, if all I knew is that I was the most unhappy I had ever been. And I knew I didn't want to do that anymore. And the lease was up in September. I was like, all I have to do is make it to September 1st. If I can just make it to September 1st, I can get out of this lease. I cannot re-sign it. And I can move out of here. By July, he had this happen and I left. While he was in jail, I got the temporary restraining order. I went to the domestic violence program, BRASS, here in Bowling Green. And they paid to help me move. They paid my deposit and my first month's rent. And they're like, all you have to do is pay the other half. And because I told them, I was like, I have like $800 saved up. They're like, okay. So they paid everything else. And they're like, okay, just take the 800 and you will have your own apartment and you can get out of there. So they helped take care of everything. They're amazing. When I went to court for the DVO, they had a representative there with me. So I had somebody there with me. They actually did free therapy for like 6 weeks afterwards, just based solely around what it's like being in an abusive relationship, what signs to look for in the beginning, and what I've learned from this. Like they have like a little homework packet you do. It's actually really cool that they offer a lot of help and support for you. If it wasn't for them, I probably wouldn't have been able to get out of there as fast as what I did, because I was out of that apartment in like a week.
Wow. Did you have any fear of him retaliating?
Yes, I was. And that's the reason I have fully pushed for the 3-year DVO. The judge was like, if you do not leave her alone, I promise you will be in jail for a very long time. He looked at, he was like, you see her, leave her alone. He's like, do not mess with her. He's like, I'm not joking with you. I will send you to prison. Luckily, I got a very nice judge that doesn't mess around with that. And so he hasn't directly bothered me since the DVO became effective in that 2-week time period where it's just temporary and you could drop it. He did harass me a lot then. He had his friends and his family like try to send me love letters, like they about how sorry he was and how he was just drunk and it was a mistake and how he promises to never do it again. And I just couldn't do it. Like it. I was like, I can't drop this because all I kept thinking about was, what about the next person that he dates and they get that red flag? Because I did a background check on him. There was nothing there. So I was like, now the next person that does a background check on him that gets a funny feeling, there is a domestic violence order. There is a felony for where you put your hands on me. He got charged for hurting the cop as well. I was like, now there is a multiple record of violence from him. And that's all I wanted.
What have you learned about addiction through your romantic and interpersonal relationships that you think other people should know if they're currently with someone that is fighting addiction? You know, I don't want to put out a blanket statement and be like, you shouldn't be with someone who has addiction, but what's a warning that you would give people that they should know if they are with someone with
Behaviors are important. Just because they are not drinking, if they are not working on their mental health, that is not going to change. You have to watch their behaviors. I recommend someone being in a program, maybe not AA, but there has to be some type of support system. They have to have someone that can call them on their BS and that they're not going to retaliate. It has to be someone that they respect. It's very common for Al-Anon people to get with addicts, though. We commonly joke around there needs to be a dating app called the 13th Step, and it's for people in Al-Anon and people in AA. Like we just, it's a chaos that we're drawn to each other. It's really not as uncommon as people think it is.
unfortunately, what's really heartbreaking is that I know that there's somebody listening that is resonating with the behaviors that your ex was exhibiting. If you could speak to that person right now and give them any advice or just words of encouragement, what would you want to tell that person?
Trust your instincts. If it is telling you that you need to get out of there and that something is wrong, you need to go. Something is wrong. That's the one thing I've learned is that your instincts are not wrong. You can have anxiety. I would recommend learning the difference between your anxious and your overthinking and what your intuition feels like. Because as a woman in that role, in that, or not even as a woman, as someone in that situation, that you start to think, I'm just overthinking. This is just my anxiety. I'm just nervous. Like, and you dismiss all those icky feelings in your body. But once you figure out what is you overthinking and what is your intuition, it's fine. Like, learn just to trust your intuition. Yeah.
Tune in on Thursday for another breakdown bonus episode where we are going to be talking about how addiction affects relationships and getting some really good insight from professionals. And I will see you whenever you decide to tune in next.